Is leadership more about logic or emotion? In today's episode, we're going to be diving into the balance between logical problem solving and emotional intelligence, and how if you master both in leadership, you can help unlock success for not only yourself, but for your team. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for great leaders who understand they want to stay ahead of their game by constantly learning and growing. I'm Damon Lemby, the host, and my co-host today is Darren Bridget, and we're both from Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades, and we're super excited about our guest today. His name is Andre Thornton. From a start as a D1 football player to an 18-year career in leadership at Lockheed Martin, to becoming a leadership and development expert, Andre's focus has shifted from solving product problems to solving people's problems. So what he really wants to do is help bring out the best in leaders and their teams. What you're going to learn from our conversation today is how leaders can balance logic and emotion to drive better results. Andre shares with us his 4 pillars that he really believes is important when it comes to high performance and success. And he also talks about how he measures against it. He tells us a great story as well, as far as a time when he was leading a team, but he wasn't a subject matter expert. And so he had to rely and trust on his team. And he gives us some great tips on how to do that. And we get into so much more. You're really going to enjoy this episode with Andre. So please stick around and let's dive right in. You know, I heard you talk a lot about how you define high performance and success. And I believe you measure it on 4 pillars. Can you share with us what those pillars are and what they mean to you?
You know, there's multiple models around this. There's the one that I like the most, which is how I've kind of gravitated to how I measure my life and success, is really understanding the areas that are most important. So I reached a point in life where I was so focused on work, as many of us are, and performing as high as possible, that the rest of my life started to suffer. And so I said, well, what in addition to work is important? Which, you know, is a natural question. But I wanted to get really serious about that and say, well, why won't I measure the success in those areas just as much as I do for work? And so I came up with these areas that, you know, we can call them pillars, but I actually designed my life around them. So there's career, which is work. There's actually, I have separate financial from work. So think of career as kind of like what you do. And then financial is like how you manage your finances. Spiritual for me is another. Relationships is another, and health is another, health and fitness. And so I created these areas. And then, you know, once I had them, as I said, I'm like, well, why am I not measuring? At the end of the year, I look at my performance at work. I get assessed. I do a self-assessment. My boss gives me an assessment. You know, I get a score. It impacts my raise or not raise. So why would I not do the same with my relationships? Why would I not do the same with my spirituality in my walk? Why would I not do the same with my health, of all things? And so I created this model around it. And you know what's funny about that is once you do that and you see it, you can't unsee it. So then these things, I can't not focus on all of them at the same time. It's kind of interesting.
It's really interesting. So you're actually giving me, I would be afraid to give myself a score for things like that. You need to outsource it to somebody I think would be more generous than me.
What do you score lowest in?
I was scoring lowest. So I for several years, I scored it. And like at the end of the year, I gave myself a red, yellow, green. It was crazy, guys. Where I was scoring lowest was actually financial. So I was so focused on everything else that I wasn't really focused on money and meeting financial goals. It was like life became so full in other areas that money just was less important. And that was really telling. Where I was consistently scoring highest was career, because you know, I shifted my life once I did this from doing sort of traditional engineering operations work to doing what I do now, which is leadership development. And what's really cool is the career pillar. It changed from career to calling over time as I got more and more clarity around what I wanted to do.
Nice. I've heard you talk about that, really being in service of others. But it's a good segue for us to talk about your experience getting here, because you've had a pretty interesting journey and you've made some major changes from athlete to engineer, building airplanes to, you know, leadership, and now running Whitman Consulting.
Yeah. How does that happen, huh?
I don't know. What you tell us. How did that happen?
Very unexpected. I was on this journey, and still am, of whatever excites me the most next. And I had no idea that that would go from engineering, which was like, hey, this is cool, learning how to build things, to working in corporate America and realizing, no, you know what? Business matters. Like understanding how the business works, because that's what this is all for, these cool things we build. And then going from that to, well, you know, business is interesting, but really it's the people that matter, because none of this happens without the people. And so I went through this domain expertise to business acumen to sort of social acumen, I call it, as a natural curiosity, and have landed and stayed in the space of the social acumen or the people instead of products for the last 10 years. I can't imagine what's next, but it truly is. I can't tell you that this is it, because this is, it's been an evolution. I have no idea what's coming.
Well, let's hope it's not, right? Because that's part of what keeps you going. So I have a quick question based on that. We had another great guest on our podcast not too long ago, Ethan Evans, who started out in engineering at Amazon and got into leadership, and you know, sort of switched from that solving puzzles in an engineering way through business acumen to, as you say, social acumen. How does that background, that engineering background, help you as a leader?
Oh, great question. You know, I majored in mechanical engineering, and I never thought that I would at some point in life call myself a people engineer. What engineers do is we solve problems. And what that means is we very systematically have to understand what the problem is and what will solve it, meaning what will make the problem go away. And so applying that same thought process to leadership and to the development of people has caused me to go down this really interesting discovery of self and discovery of the science behind the human experience. So it wasn't enough just to know that emotional intelligence is important. It became, okay, what is the neuroscience behind emotional intelligence? Why is emotional intelligence so important? How does it affect what people think and do on a daily basis? And applying that, like engineers, we take the science and the math and then we apply it to some problem that we're coming up with a solution for. So I'm using that same thought process of understanding the science. And then the application is, okay, how does this help people show up as their best selves? If we're talking about at work, it's as a leader at work.
So very fascinating. I actually have a two-part question for you. You know, moving with your engineering background and solving problems, now that you're more in the people business, have you kind of shifted in how you go about solving problems? That's question number one. And number two is, let's just stick with emotional intelligence as far as why emotional intelligence is so important, especially as a leader.
Great question. The first thing about, as far as the shift from, we'll say, products to people, is I had to realize that people are not rational. We are by definition irrational. And for an engineer, that can be really hard to get your head around. I remember early in my career learning about things like emotional intelligence and feelings and thinking that this is not important. This is not rational. It's soft and fuzzy stuff. It's actually getting in the way of me doing my real work. So let me get back to doing my work. And what I've learned is that, so you have this rational versus irrational, you know, kind of thought. And the human is just, we're not the traditional thought of rational. But if you can learn, and this is where the emotional intelligence comes in, if you can learn the sort of rationalities within the irrational, then you can come up with systems and frameworks to help people grow. For example, if someone is naturally afraid of something, if someone has a natural fear of taking a risk or doing something that we would look at them on the surface and say, wow, they could easily do that. Why are they so afraid? Once you understand that the root of that fear it's irrational on the surface, but you understand that it comes from some prior experience that the person had that created this belief, that now the belief is what's driving the fear. Now you can take that or what seems like an irrational thing, and you can come up with a solution based on understanding the rational way that it got that way. So I went down this rabbit hole of just understanding how all of these things work in the background, beneath the surface, that cause us to show up as seemingly irrational. But I feel like I've been able to rationalize it, if that makes sense.
It does. I actually think that's really important. And that's kind of why it's fun about being alive today with the neuroscience and sort of what we've discovered. But it's actually deeply rational in a sense for us to be the way that we are, because we're optimized just as an animal to survive, not for truth, or like, you know, we're just optimized to survive. And I always joke that if your brain was big enough to process everything, like a computer, like really see it, your head would need to be the size of a house. There's no birth canal it could fit through. Like, we have to have these weird shortcuts that are emotions or concepts or things like that. So in a sense, it really is rational. And understanding that makes it easier to then manage and lead. So stepping off my soapbox, my follow-up question is, what other neuroscientific levers do you pull, like nudges or things like that, as a leader to help your team?
So I think I have an interesting perspective on leadership that I've arrived on. I think of leadership as energy. Leadership is energy management. And by energy management, I mean first within ourselves. So when someone is trying to get another person to do a thing, which is influence them in some way, and what we'll call that leadership, they have a choice on how they do that. There's the sort of fear-based version, and there's what we'll call the love-based version. And so leadership is, in my opinion, making the decision to go more love-based so that you can be inspirational and getting people to move in a direction where they're happy and they feel good, even about the bad parts of moving forward. And so this leadership conversation has evolved into the way we talk about it at my firm, the difference between managing and leading, where managing is more process oriented. It is more logical. It removes the concept of human. And why I think a lot of times, you know, employees are having a hard time in their organizations because they're being managed and not led. And then leadership is the understanding the human side. And so wanting to create an energy that inspires, and it has to inspire ourselves first, because we can't show up and give something we don't have, and then hopefully transfer that into inspiring other people. But it is not easy. It is actually counterintuitive to the very thing you just said, Darren, which is that we are here to survive. We are designed. Our ancestors survived long enough to create us. So we're, you know, products of that. And so we know how to avoid dangerous situations. We're very, very fear conscious. And so how do we overcome that and shift into the inspiration of leadership? And I think it's when we do that, that you achieve things that you couldn't even imagine.
No, I think that's wonderful. And I had a guest on our show recently, Dr. Craig Dowden, who's really big on positive leadership. You know, it's a lot about, you know, inspiration, and I think and being authentic, which I think is key. And thinking about it, how do you keep up, Andre, that type of inspiration and positivity in a situation where, let's say, a company's going through layoffs and restructuring? Is there a way to still toe the line on the positive leadership and inspiration?
Yeah, I follow there's a book and a whole concept and programming around positive intelligence. The author is Shahzad Shamin, and he's got an incredible program around this. And the fundamental idea is that every circumstance can be turned into a gift. And it's one thing to say that. It's one thing to hear it and say, okay, yeah, sure, that's a great idea if you can pull it off. It's another thing to look back at your life and realize, wow, that's true. when you look back at all the what seemed like horrible things at the time that happened and realize that if they hadn't happened, the great things that happened next wouldn't have happened, then you say, wow, this there's something to it. My life, as I look at this trajectory that I've been on, and you know, now I'm in this space of a leadership development consultant. If there weren't for some very devastating things that happened in my career that forced me to make decisions that at the time seemed like this is a hard decision, things aren't going to go well, but turned out to be the best decision in the world, I can't tell you how much I appreciate those difficult things and using those difficult things as fuel to change. So for any person that's going through something, I offer them to think back at their history and how they have pulled through things before as proof that things can turn into gifts. And I'll give you just really quickly example of this. So I was at the company I was at, amazing career. And the reason I shifted to leadership development at that time, I started sort of doing it in my job. I was a director, had a team of over 2,000 people. And I decided I wanted to focus on the people instead of the product. So that was my focus. But what happened at work, the circumstance was the company was consolidating and the position that I had, I did not get to keep. It went away. I had to either at that time just go find something else to do completely or just look for what was left, so to speak. And it was at that moment that I came up with the framework I mentioned earlier, where it was like, hey, these are the pillars, these are the areas that are most important. And hey, what do I really want my career vision to be? And that's when I shifted to leadership development as an actual career, as opposed to just something that I did as a leader. Fast forward 2 years after that, the division I was in that company was divested. And the position I had in leadership development at that company, which is what happened when I made the shift, was gone. And I remember this because I tell this story. It's funny. You realize things later on. I have a son who's 8. And my last day at the company, I was with this company for 18 years. And I'm not a risk taker. I married my high school sweetheart. You know, I was at the same company for my entire career right out of college. And my son was born 2 weeks before my last day at this company. And it was the easiest decision in the world because I was so clear on what I wanted to do and why I wanted to do it. So this devastating thing that happened, which was me not having a clear job 2 weeks after having a son, luckily on those benefits, became the most amazing thing in my life in terms of this journey that I'm on as a consultant, as an entrepreneur, and now getting to teach leadership development all around the world. There's no way it would have happened without that devastating circumstance.
That idea of adversity being part of your story, and if you manage it in a positive way, you can see what's good about it and how it led you to good things. Damon and I both have some health things that way that we've gone through, and you've got your story. We all do. But I worry sometimes when people get so connected to the positive, they don't know how to do it in practice. Like you don't have an employee come to you and say, oh my God, I just got cancer. And you're like, oh my God, you're so lucky. How do you do it in the real world? Acknowledging that I think sometimes in the US we don't know how to deal with like people being sad or hardship. Like, how do you do it in the real world?
I am an evolving, self-aware person. And the way I used to deal with what you just described was I would ignore it. I would, anything bad that happened, I would try my best to just not think about it. And that was my way of staying positive. What I have learned to do is process it and give it time and space. So if we don't, and this is something else I had to learn the hard way, if we don't do that, the trauma is still there, the wound is still there, and it'll show up in strange ways. early in my career, very early, 2 years out, I had a devastating personal thing happen where I lost my best friend at the time. He was actually set to be the best man in my wedding, my first cousin, lost him to suicide about 10 months before the wedding. And I did not know how to process that. And that stuck with me for over a decade because I didn't go to therapy. I didn't know how to process that. All I knew how to do was to try to just shove it somewhere. And what I learned, and you know, since then, other things have happened, is that for myself and for everyone that is going through something, the most important thing is to allow that space and to let everyone know it's okay. It's okay to not be okay and to move through it, whatever process and time that you need. So this concept of positivity, I've learned absolutely is not to just say, oh, hey, don't worry about that. It's fine. Here's the gift. I'm here with you. Whatever you need to do to move through this. I was very fortunate when that happened with my cousin that my leadership team was very, very patient and kind to me and forgiving and just understood whatever time I needed. That is what we need in those times, someone to be there for us.
Well, first and foremost, sorry for your loss and thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing that. And that was a question I was going to have for you. If somebody is going through a really tough situation like that, how can people help support them? Is it to just kind of sit back and just tell them that you're here, I'm here for you? Let's say, for instance, you're a leader and you have somebody on your team who's got a traumatic or a really difficult situation. How do you help?
Yeah, great question. The best, and there is no perfect answer to this, right? The best that I have seen and experienced around that is very similar to what you said. It is an energy and statements of, I'm here for you, whatever you need. It is very much I can't imagine what you're going through. It is very much hey, this thing, whatever it is, I'm not going to act like I can relate and say, hey, I know what it is. And I'm going to push you through it or help you through it. It is whatever you need. I am here for you. And I actually had a good friend say this, which was kind of interesting and simple and profound. He said, so, you know, when someone shares something that's really difficult and we don't know what to say, he said, sometimes it's good just to say that. I don't know what to say. And that statement alone goes a lot further than just the silence, because the silence can, you know, be interpreted multiple ways. But if the person hears you say, hey, you know, this is unimaginable, I don't know what to say, sometimes that's enough. That's enough. Just to let the person know that however they're feeling right now is okay, and we're here for them, and we love them and care for them regardless.
No, that's wonderful advice. Because it's a very difficult situation, right? Because you want to be there, and you don't want to say, hey, I get it, because you don't, because you haven't been there. And so just acknowledging it is great. Let's switch gears. Let's talk a little bit more about what does Whitman Consulting do? How do you serve your customers?
Yeah, how do we serve our customers? I love that question. You know, as I mentioned, this is a very personal journey for me. It's a very personal concept of a company to be delivering services. And it's all about people. It's all about each individual that we serve. So we have a process, of course, you know, I'm the engineer. So we have a process that we go through where we identify problems and we help people solve them. They're people problems, which are the hardest ones. And those people problems can show up in, there's an organization that can show up in, hey, we have a culture, we have values that we would hope to instill and make sure that everyone is living by and behaving by. And so we will look at that and say, hey, this is the hopeful outcome. Where are the problems in this? Where are the gaps? And based on those gaps, we go and we tailor and customize a solution to address those gaps. And those gaps can be across several parts of the organization. They can be across different values or different behaviors. And so we'll figure out like, what are the areas that we really want to focus on first? And then we take the client through the process of closing the gap. So when I first started doing this work and, you know, pulling a team together on how we're going to get this done, there was this, hey, you show up and you do a course and, you know, they have a great experience. And always wondered, so what happens next? How do we know if it worked? Engineers can't do things and not know if they were. I mean, we were designing airplanes back where I was. There was no, you know, we just put the plan together and it'll be fine. Like, we need to know it works. So what we do is we really, at Whitman Consulting, we stay with the client through the entire process and we track measures along the way to ensure they're getting the outcomes that they want. And those outcomes can be anything from changes in behavior and how we measure those. They can be sentiment. Sentiment of, like, say, how does a team feel? Do they feel there's trust within the team? We track the behaviors as they change over time. And we'll even go as far as tracking some of the business outcomes to say, hey, we track these things for this particular group, and we're able to see the business outcomes are different than they were for a different group.
I love that you're taking a comprehensive approach. I don't know if you've heard that kind of old joke about you, the typical consultant that comes in, and I'm thinking more like, you know, like a process consultant, like when you work on our attitude and they start off in the morning, it's like, you know, we can grow 10% next year. And the afternoon, you know, the middle of the day, it's like 20%. It's like, that's not big enough. At the end of the day, it's like 30%, 35%. And like, that's all they did is they just got you all fired up about what you think is possible, but they didn't really do anything. So when you're looking at how do we actually make a difference for this company by closing gaps, are you seeing themes in sort of the types of gaps? And I would include both the social product and then also maybe like the process and the organization and the company or whatever.
Yes, absolutely. The biggest, well, I'll start with the social product is the way people feel about each other at work. And that can be measured in different ways. One of my favorites is trust. But we have this natural culture in most organizations of showing up and focusing on the work. And when I was coming up in corporate America, it was very much you leave personal at home. And since the pandemic, which really accelerated this, you know, home was, you know, I'm sitting here at home right now. And you may see my cat, which I don't have, but if I did, crawl across my... So home and work became integrated. And also we have a new generation that wants to feel not so worky, if you will, when they work. And so the social connection, and, you know, everyone doesn't have to like each other, but everyone has to trust each other. And so how do you create an environment where people feel that they can bring their full selves and their true ideas and respectfully help that organization create the best products and services? That we have found is the number one thing to fix, especially with folks being virtual now and now this desire to bring more of themselves to work. So what I hear over and over again are teams needing to be more cohesive and gel more. And we are delivering solutions that help them change that and grow it. What we're finding, and this is going to the second part of the question of the business outcomes, is when you do that, it doesn't happen right away. You know, so you might not see profit go up right away. You might not see revenue jump right away. But over time, you will see those things improve. And it's like being willing to put in that work up front to get that outcome is what we really focus on. And again, we stay with organizations throughout the entire journey because for us, you know, if it doesn't work, we kind of feel like we failed. And if it doesn't work, we will figure out how to make it work.
I think that's great. And I think it's very important for employees to feel like they can bring their whole self, you know, be their whole self instead of just like my work self versus my personal self. But have you ever run into any situations where maybe people brought their whole self to the office and it just, they shouldn't have, you know what I mean?
It's like, not that self.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. We very much. That's it's kind of the first thing that comes up oftentimes is, you know, is the idea that I can just say whatever I want, however I want to say it. And we've had to learn that clearly that's not the message. And instead, the idea is, how do we bring out the best of ourselves and each other to work? And this concept of bringing out the best of yourself, I remember years ago, early in my career, I was gung-ho. I was so excited that we had a company strategy from the corporate level that flowed all the way down to my level for the first time at the company I was with. And I was so excited that I put this PowerPoint presentation together in a spreadsheet that showed how my objectives flowed all the way up to the CEO and the corporate CEO's objectives for the year. And I called a meeting with everybody I could fathom that were my peers or mentees, and I showed it to them. And, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm going through this thing. I wasn't even looking at them because I was so excited about the data. And I finally paused and I looked around and nobody cared. It was like I was talking about the least relevant thing in the world to them. And it was in that moment that I realized people care about themselves, and not in a selfish way, but in a, back to what you mentioned, Darren, in a survivalistic way. And so with that insight, what we do when we're delivering any content, and, you know, this idea of someone wanting to show up and bring a version of themselves that might not be the most productive, the focus is how do we help you be the best version of you? That's what this entire thing is about for each individual that we work with. Them being able to bring that best version of themselves to the company is the byproduct. But we're trying to help people become self-involved in how to grow and become their best selves. And so when we do things through that lens, when you run into something like, hey, you know, I feel like I'm having to hold back because there's things I want to say, then we can say, hey, is that your best self? Is that your most productive self? And then we can go through the actual science now of explaining why it's not, because it won't actually get you the outcome that you want.
That's good. I kind of keep swinging you back and forth, but, you know, and that's good explanation too. I like the idea that being your best self instead of just, you know, I'm a cynical bastard today and that's who I'm showing up as. Nobody needs that. But I also see, and I wonder if you see this too, that there has been a lot of effort over the last, you know, handful of years to try to bring more psychological safety into the workplace. I mean, Google's, you know, that they did that research like 10 years ago, right? Bring more EQ into the workplace, more DEI, and people are making an effort to be more understanding. But then I feel like what ends up happening is kind of the opposite of creating psychological safety, is people get afraid to like say anything to each other. And they kind of almost get worse in their own little bubbles, you know? So on the other side, how do you get, what happened? Do you see that? And how do you help people feel like, you know, we're doing the work so we can actually show up as our best selves and talk?
Yeah, absolutely. The shortest answer to that question is grace. Psychological safety requires giving people grace. None of us are perfect. The idea is we're all trying to get better. And if we can create an environment where people believe that that's true, that it's not just stated, but it's true, and that if they say the wrong thing, they will be forgiven and they will have an opportunity to learn and grow from it, then that's how you create that. What I have learned, if you don't intentionally say all of that, what I just said, it won't just happen. People will just, I mean, natural, we close up. I don't want to say the wrong thing. If I'm worried about saying the wrong thing, I just won't say anything. Because it's not worth the risk, right? You know, it's not worth me putting myself out there to potentially be put in this negative situation. So what we do is we very intentionally create that space by saying some of the things that I just mentioned. And one of the things that we hear consistently from our clients, and it's so simple, it almost makes me feel guilty because you know, we've got this content and it's, you know, I think it's great. I'm really interested in it. I'm the nerd in this group, you know, all the time. Like, hey, guess how this neuroscience works? And what we hear consistently from our clients is, yeah, the content is great, but what we really appreciate is the kinds of conversations you enacted in us between each other that we were not having before. And I have learned that that is the actual magic. How do you create an environment where people can say those things that they just had not said to each other before?
That's good. That kind of falls in line with that research about therapy. Talk therapy has been shown to work, but there's no consistency around which methodology or school, because it's the person. It's did you find the right person to connect with? And it's in that relationship that the magic happens. I had a little bit of a different question, but I was dying to ask you, which is, you told this great story about, I think you were Lockheed Martin. So you're building planes and you suddenly move into like a new role, your leadership role, and now you're helping to sell planes, and hundreds of millions of dollars are on the line here. And but that's not your domain knowledge. Finance isn't your domain knowledge. So you had to manage a team of people and something outside of your expertise. With all this at stake, how do leaders do that? How do you lead when you're not the subject matter expert?
Oh, wow, Baron, I love that question. I was so fortunate to be formally introduced to leadership in the company in a role where I had no idea what I was doing. That's the best way I could put it. So I got an MBA in finance, right? And I got really interested in finance. This is when I mentioned I went from the domain expertise to business acumen. This one, I was, oh my goodness, I just had not understood business this way. And so the role that I landed in was the one you mentioned, where it's putting business deals together to sell aircraft. You know, I'm basically an aircraft salesman putting the deal together, the financial package globally around the world. And before that, I mean, literally the job I had before that, I was on the shop floor, working on the shop floor as a project engineer type. So my introduction to leading this team, because I was a senior manager and it was my responsibility to lead the team, the pricing contracts and so forth. My introduction to that was, I absolutely had to depend on their expertise because this was not my bag. And what that did is it caused me to quickly develop leadership skills that were very, very open-minded, empathetic, not domineering, not thinking, you know, I'm the one, the smartest in the room and telling everyone what to do and they should listen to me. It was purely, hey, how can I help everyone bring their best collective ideas to the table? And then how can I learn enough about what everyone's doing so that I can have enough judgment to be the leader of this organization and really focus on the big decisions that need to be made at the right time? It was the most unexpected, challenging, like head down, trying to figure it out, scrambling, but then coming out with this most amazing, beautiful learning experience that I couldn't have drawn it differently. And at the end of that, had closed a little bit over $1 billion in new business. And when I look back at how it happened, so much of it was we would be in situations and I wouldn't quite know, and someone else in the room would. And because I didn't speak first and allowed that voice to come in, we would get the solution. It was fascinating.
I think that's super fascinating. And I know we're kind of coming up on time, but I got a kind of a follow-up question for that. What advice do you have for individuals in a situation like that who maybe struggle with the self-confidence to, you know, they are the leaders, but they struggle with being vulnerable to the point of letting somebody else take the lead when they really need to? What do you tell them?
Yeah, the thing that I leaned into and became a strong point for me was relationship building. So based on the relationships I was able to build with each individual on my team, and that relationship was based on the utmost respect and admiration for the knowledge that they had, expertise that they had, and for them as people, just based on the work that they did. So by leaning into that with each individual person, I felt that they had my back, and that gave me confidence. Because if I felt that, and I remember there was one person on the team, I really, you know, I felt like he was so good at what he did. And it took a while, I think, for him to accept me in this role, for lack of a better description. And what I did with that is I really, really leaned into the relationship with him and just really showing him how much I admired and respected, but then also I had a job to do. And it was that balance that enabled him to develop enough confidence in me, and then that gave me enough confidence to do the job. So it was this interesting kind of dance where confidence was developed. It wasn't there at first. It was developed through these relationships, through me giving the respect to the team members to then have them grow in respect for me and make me feel more confident in the role.
That's a great story. And it is so much relationships, isn't it? I mean, we work in organizations. You work with other people. If you're going to get stuff done, it's really about the relationships. You give me a great idea, by the way. You know how people get promoted to manager because they're really good at their job, and then every impulse they have is to micromanage the people that they manage? We should promote people into manager roles and then immediately switch what they're managing for so they have zero expertise in it. So now the only thing you can do is to try to be a good manager because you don't even know what you're doing. That could be fun. I don't know if I want to try it with our company, but it's a good idea. So a couple of things to take away here, that as a leader, and the way that you've approached it, which I just think sounds like such a great way to do it, is bringing that curious, wanting to solve problems mindset to the puzzle of human beings, which is really one of the most interesting things to work on and so fundamental to who we are. And when you do this, you bring both the best version of yourself and you encourage the people around you to bring the best version of themselves through hardships, through good times or bad times, whatever it is, balance that with some grace towards each other. And really, that's the kind of that secret to creating that great environment. But of course, it's how you do it that makes all the difference, which is why when you're working with people, it's that relationship you're developing with them. So for our listeners out there, if you want to build that kind of environment, Whitman Consulting is, I'm sure they're available.
Thank you so much, Darren. You described that perfectly.
Yeah, good job on that one, Darren. So Andre, following up on that, where can our listeners connect with you at?
Website is whitmanconsulting.com, which will take you to consultwhitman.com, but either one will work. LinkedIn, you can find us, just search Whitman Consulting. And of course, other social media handles, Facebook and Instagram are there as well. And there's plenty of content that we put out through the website, through our social media on Whitman Consulting. Also, if you want to follow me directly, Andre W. Thornton, if you search that in any of the social media platforms. Also, fun fact, Whitman is my middle name. I often get that question, where does Whitman come from? And it goes back to my great-grandfather. He's Whitman Thornton Sr. My dad is Whitman Thornton III. He gave me Whitman in the middle. And that son I mentioned to you that was born 2 weeks before I started the company, he's...
Craig? His name Craig?
Carter.
Whitman Carter, Thornton. Close, yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Carter.
Yeah. So that's where the name comes from. And if you search Whitman, hopefully you'll find us.
Andre, you got this great story about, you know, reaching your potential, growth mindset. Can you share that story with us?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how things happen. And maybe even early in life, you don't even realize how significant they are. So, you know, I'm originally from Richmond, Virginia. I grew up in Richmond, right outside of Richmond. And little kid, skinny little kid. Shy and introverted. Those are two different things I learned later. I was both of them. And so as a kid, I started playing little league football and I wasn't really good. I mean, no one is when they first start, but I was like the really shy, skinny, not good. And one day they gave me the ball and I closed my eyes and I just started running and everyone must have looked the other way because I scored a touchdown. So now I started to believe, hey, I must be kind of good. So I'm going to start working hard at this. So it was kind of a life changing moment, believe it or not, as an 8-year old. So I started working hard at football, and my grades went up, and, you know, get to high school. And the most unexpected thing happened in that it's my senior year of football, I get this offer to play in college, full scholarship. Didn't expect it. Didn't expect it because, to be honest with you guys, I didn't think I was that good. I didn't think I was good enough to play college football. You know, I wasn't like all state, all district. I was just a starter on the team, as captain of the team. So I get the scholarship. I go to VMI. It's amazing. Never thought I would play college football. It's Division I AA, majoring in mechanical engineering. It's a small school, but again, it's 1AA. So we played some pretty interesting folks. So they throw me in the first game. You know, they were playing University of Richmond. You know, I mean, these guys were so big and strong. It's like Mack trucks running around the field. I'm just trying not to get killed. So my trying not to get killed turned into making a few plays, and I became a starter as a freshman, which was, again, unexpected and interesting. So fast forward to the point of this story, and there was this one play in my sophomore season that kind of sums up this concept of really understanding what you're capable of. So we're playing this team, UT Chattanooga, and fourth quarter, about 2 minutes left in the game, we're winning this game 20-17, okay, which was a big deal because we didn't win a lot of games back then. 20-17, second and short, I play defensive back, I line up in my position, and I look up to see who is in front of me, and it's none other than Terrell Owens. T.O. Now, I wasn't completely surprised. I knew he was on the team, but he was not the person I was hoping would be in front of me in this moment. So he looks at me, and I remember this like it was yesterday because I was so afraid. He looks at me, he makes eye contact, and he smiles. And then he looks at the quarterback, and he goes like this. And I'm like, oh, no, this isn't good. This does not look like a good thing. All right, please, Lord, help me through this. The ball is hiked. He starts running towards me, and I'm just like standing there frigid. I'm like, please let him just cut left, cut right. We'll all run up and tackle him. And so, of course, he just runs right past me. One-on-one coverage. So I turn around and I start running. I'm running as fast as I can. And as we start to get close to the end zone, I notice the crowd gets really quiet. And he starts to slow down just a tad bit. And his arms go up. He had these huge arms. His hands open. He had these huge hands. And his eyes get real big. And I realize what's happening. The ball is coming. So I'm a yard or so behind him, and all I can do in that moment was close my eyes and jump and say, no. I end up hitting him. I hit the ground. He hit the ground. The ball was laying on the ground. This was a game-winning pass breakup. He was a senior. I was a sophomore. So what I learned in that moment and what I've carried forward with me for the rest of my life is we actually have no idea what we're capable of. We just have to be willing to close our eyes and jump. I can tell you at least half a dozen times in life where I have closed my eyes and I have jumped, not knowing how it's going to end, or not even really all the way expecting it to end well, but it has ended up beautifully. So when we think about what we're capable of and our potential, what we do is we help people move through that jump. And we give them a safe landing no matter how it goes. And time again, we find out that they're way more capable than anything they could have ever imagined. So that's my potential story. I'm still learning. I'm still growing from it. And I'm still closing my eyes and jumping.
No, that's awesome. I love it. Well, before we close out, do you have any final words that you want to share with our audience?
Glad you asked that. Final words to kind of leave folks with. Out of all this study and, you know, all I mentioned about just being interested in the neuroscience and how humans work, I offer two concepts to consider. One is self-discovery. And I mentioned that because when I talked about emotional intelligence before, hopefully most of our listeners are familiar with the four quadrants. So the first two are about self, like self-awareness and self-management. And the second two are about others, you know, relationship building and empathy. And when I first was exposed to that, I didn't focus on the first two because I didn't want to deal with my own stuff. That was hard. You know, I said to be a leader, I need to be able to effectively influence other people. So I'm going to focus on those. And that was a lot easier. And I have learned that we can't effectively lead if we don't understand ourselves. Many of us know who we are by name, but we don't know who we are by what our values are, by what our natural talents and strengths are, by what our attitude is and how we show up and how that's affecting us. There's so much self-discovery that I wish I had started earlier. And now that I'm doing it and it's a never-ending journey, I just encourage everyone to do it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is really short, and that is to have grace with yourself as you go through that process. It's not a math problem that you can just figure out these, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. It is a journey. And as long as you're trying to move down the road on that journey, then you are being successful. So have grace for yourself and continue the self-discovery journey. And I believe that that leaves us with unlimited potential, because everyone that I've worked with, everyone that we talk to, after we work through just beginning that process, we can tell we're just scratching the surface.
I think that's wonderful advice to end on. It's like, don't be so hard on yourself, you know, and just the journey never ends. I'd like to say great leaders aren't born. They're constantly in the making, and just work on getting 1% better whenever possible, you know, and just keep moving forward. Andre, you were awesome. I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing your wisdom and knowledge with our audience. And for all of you out there, please do us a favor. In order for us to continue to get great guests like Andre, please like and subscribe and tell your friends about our show. And until next time, everybody, stay curious and keep learning. Have a great day. Thank you.